It is Tuesday, April 24th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, the presidents of the United States and France meet at the White House to discuss Iran and tariffs. President Donald Trump condemned the Iran nuclear agreement.
The Iran deal is a disaster. They're testing missiles. What is that all about?
A Toronto motorist is charged with 10 counts of first-degree murder, and singer Cardi B has a new hit single and some big personal changes on the way. It's all ahead. President Donald Trump welcomed French President Emmanuel Macron to the White House Tuesday with military pageantry just ahead of talks on world issues where the two leaders disagree. The 2015 Iran nuclear agreement was expected to be discussed. Macron, a supporter of the agreement, was expected to try to persuade Trump not to pull out of the six-nation nuclear deal with Iran. Trump faces a May 12 deadline to decide again on waiving economic sanctions against Iran as part of the agreement. The president wasted no time repeating how he felt about the agreement.
The Iran deal is a disaster. They're testing missiles. What is that all about? You look at the ballistic missiles that they're going and testing. What kind of a deal is it where you're allowed to test missiles all over the place? What kind of a deal is it when you don't talk about Yemen and you don't talk about all of the other problems that we have with respect to Iran, especially look at what they're doing in Iraq? You just take a look at what's happening in virtually any place in the Middle East. Iran is behind it. So what kind of a deal is this where it wasn't even discussed?
For his part, Macron spoke of the obstacles facing the two countries.
We have a lot of challenges ahead of us regarding our two countries. Terrorism, security, and a lot of other issues we will discuss. So we have a lot of work to be done together. Sure. But I'm very, very honored and very pleased because whatever the context could be, this relationship is stronger than the events. And on top of it, we have an excellent personal relationship, so I want to thank you for that.
The two leaders are also discussing other contentious issues. Trump's stated plan to withdraw U.S. troops from Syria at a time Macron wants a continued U.S. presence, the U.S. leader's intention to withdraw from the Paris Climate Change Agreement, and his plan to impose tariffs on aluminum and steel imports that could curtail European exports. Trump takes great pride in his friendship with Macron, which is one of the reasons he invited the French president to be his guest for the first state visit of a foreign leader in his administration. Later, they will attend a state dinner at the White House. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Doug Bernard. So, Doug, what is trending?
Well, I can tell you what's trending in my social media feed, and that is the Washington Capitals' victory last night, decisive defeat of the Columbus Blue Jackets, but I don't think that's what's going on for most people. A lot of people talking about the state dinner tonight. The president obviously hosting French President Macron and his wife, Birgit, I think, or Brigitte.
I think it's Brigitte.
Yeah, I think it's Brigitte. And so lots of people, believe it or not, talking about the dinner, who's going and who's not, and what the menu is. Here's Steve Schmidt. It seems odd to me, but here's Steve Schmidt, former campaign advisor to Senator John McCain. The relationship between the U.S. and France, our first and oldest ally, will be celebrated tonight at a state dinner that not a single leader of the Democratic Party is invited is another Trump assault on the dignity of his office and our country. Lafayette must be weeping. Howard Fineman, the political commentator, has similar thoughts. Trump's unprecedented refusal to invite a single member of the opposition party is vivid evidence of the cancerous tribalism eating away at American ideals of democracy. Not everybody is in agreement. Here's Mike Zolo. Forget presidents. No person has ever been so badly treated by the media than the left than Donald Trump. They can cry all they want about him not inviting them to the state dinner. They're anti-American Marxists. Not only should they not be invited, they should be deported. Strong opinions. And here's something that's kind of creating its own little discussion. Eric Erickson, the conservative commentator and columnist, was looking over the menu, tonight's menu, And I'll get to that in just a quick moment. And he says, this menu is why I could never be president. And then he links to it. He said, I'd serve fried chicken and mashed potatoes with sweet potato pie for dessert. None of this unpronounceable frou-frou garbage. So here's what the unpronounceable frou-frou garbage is. Very quickly, first course, there's a goat cheese gâteau, tomato jam, buttermilk biscuit, and young variegated lettuces. The main course is a rack of spring lamb, burnt cipollini soubise, and Carolina gold rice jambalaya, and for dessert, a nectarine tart and some creme fraiche ice cream. The reason that Mrs. Trump put this menu together is because many of the dishes are American Southern kind of classics, and many of them, in turn, inspired by French cooking.
Oh.
And so that was the whole idea, but apparently some people think it's just a little frou-frou.
Yeah. Well, apparently she's been very involved in planning this.
She has been. She's had months to do it, and this is their first state dinner.
Yeah. Thanks very much, Doug. That's social media editor Doug Bernard. Here are some of the top news stories that are trending. Suicide bombers hit security forces in southwest Pakistan. President Trump says North Korean leader Kim Jong-un is very honorable. Police continue to search for a motive in the Nashville massacre, and a confirmation hearing is delayed for President Trump's pick to head the Veterans Administration. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the VOAnews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
A new UK-led study has confirmed what a number of scientists have long suspected about the ice giant planet Uranus. Its upper atmosphere probably smells like rotten eggs. The rotten egg smell can be attributed to a gas known as hydrogen sulfide. An international group of scientists conducted what they describe as sensitive spectroscopic observations with the Gemini North telescope's near-infrared integral field spectrometer. By splitting apart infrared light from Uranus into different wavelengths, the astronomers found and confirmed the presence of hydrogen sulfide gas swirling high in the giant planet's cloud tops. The study detailing the group's findings has been recently published in the journal Nature Astronomy. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, Saudi-led airstrikes in Yemen killed dozens of civilians. A motorist suspected of killing 10 people and injuring 15 others by driving a van down a sidewalk in Toronto was charged in court Tuesday with 10 counts of first-degree murder and multiple counts of attempted murder. The charges came during the first court appearance of suspect Alec Messanian, who was standing in a white prison jumpsuit with his head down and his arms behind his back. Canadian police have been looking for a motive behind Monday's attack, the worst mass killing in Canada in decades, and what Toronto Police Chief Mark Saunders said definitely looked deliberate.
Based on witness accounts, we have a vehicle that started north on Yonge Street from Finch and drove southbound at some point in time on sidewalks, at some point in time driving southbound in the northbound lane. So it's very clear just from a general perspective to say that the actions definitely look deliberate.
On Tuesday, Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau said the attack doesn't appear to have been motivated by terrorism.
Obviously, all Canadians continue and will continue to have questions about why this happened, what could possibly be the motives behind it. As was indicated last night by our public security minister, at this time we have no reason to suspect that there is any national security element to this attack, but obviously the investigations continue.
The act of violence followed several incidents of using vehicles to attack pedestrians in Europe and New York. Nelson Wiseman is a political science professor and director of the Canadian Studies Program and the University of Toronto. He tells International Edition's Victor Beattie, Canada has girded itself for such an attack, and he's surprised it appeared not to involve jihadists.
I'm not sure this was politically motivated. He may be mentally disturbed because, you know, he kept yelling, shoot me, hit me in the head. He kept raising his hand as if he had a pistol, which he didn't. And that's the image I saw in the video. So this suggests to me someone is disturbed. We'll learn more in coming days. One of the things about the Canadian authorities, as opposed to the American authorities, is they're much more guarded about the information they release. We've had attacks in Canada in the past. It was just over a year ago that six Muslims were killed at a mosque in Quebec City, and a number were injured, but this was violence against Muslims. This situation does not seem to be related to Islam in any way.
Do you think something like this could have been inspired by what happened in Europe and the U.S.?
No, I don't think it is. Only in the sense that it's the use of a vehicle, but not in terms of any sort of political motivation. But because we've been seeing vehicles weaponized, I think that has captured some people's imagination. The other thing I would point out, as in Europe, this wasn't a shooting incident, you see, because there are strict gun controls in Canada. This isn't to say that there aren't guns floating around, and long arms like rifles can be legally held. They've got to be registered. But when it comes to handguns, there are a lot of restrictions, although there are a number floating around illegally, because they're brought in from the United States and easily brought across the border. This is a very busy street. Yonge Street is, I don't know what to compare it to, you know, Market Street in San Francisco, let's say, and it's uptown, but it's still in a very busy area. Yonge and Sheppard, there's a major subway station there. In fact, two subway lines intersect at that point, and I see that they're planning to close that off for a few days. I'm not sure that's all necessary. But we do have a number of fatalities, and when fatalities happen, there's a great attention and detail given to collecting all possible evidence. So that'll tie up a major intersection in the city for quite a while.
Canada was still reeling from the April 6 crash of a bus and truck in the western province of Saskatchewan that killed 16 people, including 10 members of the Humboldt ice hockey team, and injured another 13 people. The UN Human Rights Office is calling for an investigation into the killings of dozens of civilians in Yemen during the past 4 days by Saudi-led coalition airstrikes. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from the Rights Office in Geneva.
The UN Human Rights Office reports Saudi-led airstrikes killed at least 45 people, all civilians, and wounded many more, including women and children, in three separate incidents. The first attack on Friday reportedly killed 21 civilians, including five children, traveling in a vehicle in a village in Taiz governorate. 2 days later, human rights monitors report many people were killed and injured in two separate incidents. Human rights spokeswoman Liz Throssell says the most devastating of these occurred at a wedding ceremony. She says two coalition airstrikes destroyed a wedding tent, killing at least 19 civilians and injuring some 50 others. She says the final toll of deaths and injuries may be higher.
Local inhabitants informed our staff that the victims do not have any political affiliations, not to say that that would have made the wedding party a legitimate target. They also said there were no military objectives in the vicinity of the targeted area at the time of the attack.
Throssell tells VOA she does not know whether the attacks on civilian targets resulted from mistakes or were part of deliberate actions.
We have, over the years, since March 2015, documented numerous attacks, often when large number of civilians have been killed, in cases like wedding parties or funerals where civilians gather. But it's clear that such incidents continue to shock, and that is why it is so important that there is an independent, thorough investigation.
The UN Human Rights Office is urging the Saudi coalition to fully investigate all these latest deadly attacks. It adds those found to be responsible should be held accountable and reparations should be provided to the victims. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hi, I'm Nikki Strong.
You love music?
How about Blake Shelton and Carrie Underwood? Or Merle Haggard and Loretta Lynn? Experience the best in country music on Country Hits USA. I bring you some country rock, outlaw, a little hillbilly, contemporary, and more, with a dash of entertainment news, too. So join me for Country Hits USA on VOA 1, the voice of America.
This is International Edition. A rap singer has issued a hot new single. She also has 8 Billboard Music Award nominations. VOA's Border Crossings host Larry London joins me with the latest.
Today, Sarah, we are talking about one of the hottest musicians on the planet right now, Cardi B. Her real name, by the way, is Belcalis Almanzar. And how she came about Cardi B? Well, she said it's a nickname because her sister's name is Hennessy. So she was named after Bacardi, the famous rum. So they call her Cardi. She said she added the B, which stands for beautiful. And she is indeed. And Cardi B's new album, breaking all kinds of records. The album is called Invasion of Privacy. It went to number one where it debuted. It streamed over 100 million times in its first week, which is just an unbelievable record, which had previously been held by Beyonce. And now Cardi B owns that record. Cardi was nominated for several BET Awards last year on the success of her hit Bodak Yellow, which went up to number one and made her the second ever female rapper to reach number one on the Billboard charts. The first was Lauryn Hill in 1998. Wow. So it's been a long time since it's happened again. And Cardi B's new album has already given us a couple of hits. She's got a new song out, which we're going to check out right now. I want to hear I Like It. Here's Cardi B with J Balvin. I like it.
I like diamonds, I like stunning, I like shining, I like $1 million deals, where's my pen? I'm signing, I like those Balenciagas, the ones that look like socks, I like going to the Tula, I put rocks all in my watch, I like texts from my exes when they want a second chance.
Well, certainly, Larry, rap seems to be increasingly in the mainstream of music.
Everything rap, hip-hop, R&B, soul, it seems definitely it's getting its turn in the spotlight these days. Black Panther, you know, became huge in the box office, still remains huge in the box office, breaking all kinds of records. Saudi Arabia just decided to show Black Panther, the first time in 35 years a Western film was shown in Saudi Arabia. But Cardi B's riding the wave of success, much like Nicki Minaj and artists very similar to her genre, her style of music, although she's got her own unique flair. It's kind of unfiltered. She says what she thinks, and she doesn't hold back. She's engaged to Offset, who is a member of a group called Migos. She's pregnant with her first child with Offset. There was a big scandal in the broadcast industry last year when Offset was caught cheating. Not once, but twice, fathered a child with another woman. And Cardi B's constantly asked, what are your thoughts? What's the relationship? What's going on? And she said, leave us alone. Leave me alone. It's a private matter. I'm dealing with it. He and I are still together, still getting married. And, of course, the baby's coming sometime in the summer. And Cardi B's just been all over the place. She was at Coachella Valley Music Festival for the second weekend in a row. She sang the song that we just heard with J Balvin called I Like It on stage with J Balvin. And she also performed with SZA. And Beyonce as well. So she's hot. And she got paid only $70,000 for performing at Coachella and spent $300,000 on her stage. So she put her own money out there. She had a song out a few weeks ago, which she released from her Invasion of Privacy album called Be Careful. Some believe that's a message to Offset, her fiance, that he better be careful. But Cardi B, you know, she's worked her way up through the ranks. She worked in an Amish supermarket when she was a teenager, and right around 19, she became a stripper, which she's gotten a lot of slack for, but she stands by that and says, I admire what they do. You know, and she said, stripping helped pay for my breast implants. That's her own.
Well, that's one way of looking at it.
That's her own quote. She goes out to the clubs these days and still supports people who choose that profession. She was in GQ magazine this current month, this edition. She revealed a lot about herself and things that she likes and doesn't like. And one of the people that she admires, which is a surprise to everybody, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, FDR, as a president. She said the guy was in a wheelchair, paralyzed, had polio, and he led this country. She said anybody like that deserves my respect. So that's how Cardi B is, and she's tremendously talented. Who knows where the future is going to take her? This is her debut album, Invasion of Privacy, and she's the hottest property right now, going out on tour this summer with Bruno Mars.
That kind of surprises me because she's so busy being pregnant, getting ready with a wedding, you know?
And people are asking that very same question, is how will this impact the tour? And she says, I'm going to perform up until the minute I can't. She revealed her pregnancy on Saturday Night Live a couple of weekends ago. People had thought she was pregnant because she was wearing loose clothing. But then, you know, they put a spotlight on her with a tight dress. They pulled back, you know, the camera pulled back, and there it was, the baby bump, and it's out in the open. Now everybody knows it. And she's well along. It's got to be at least second trimester at this point. So the baby's coming sometime this summer. But Cardi B, she's hot. She's out there, and you can't avoid her anyway. Even if you want, she's everywhere. Cardi B's new song is called I Like It with J Balvin.
All right. Thanks very much, Larry. That's Larry London. He's the host of VOA's Border Crossings. I said I like it like that. I'm in the district in the chat. Certified, you know I'm gas. Drop the top and blow the brand. Oh, he's so handsome, what's his name? Well, the music of Cardi B brings us an end to our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
On April 25th, we observe World Malaria Day. It is an occasion to recognize the global effort to effectively control and eventually eliminate this devastating disease. This year's theme is Ready to Beat Malaria. In 2016, 216 million people became sick with malaria, and over 445,000 died. The World Health Organization, or WHO, reports that 90% of malaria cases were reported in Africa, as were 91% of malaria-related deaths. The good news is malaria is preventable and curable. Over the last nearly two decades, there has been a coordinated global effort to eliminate the disease altogether. Between 2000 and 2015, new cases among populations at risk fell by 29% globally. After an unprecedented period of success in controlling this disease, it is clear that there is more work ahead. We continue to focus on prevention. Among the most successful weapons we have against this deadly disease are insecticide-treated nets and indoor spraying with insecticides to kill the mosquitoes that carry the illness, causing parasite. These preventative tools, when coupled with strategies to prevent malaria during pregnancy, low-cost diagnostic tools, and highly effective malaria treatments, dramatically reduce death and disease from malaria. Yet much more needs to be done. To address remaining challenges, including the emergence of drug-resistant malaria, the WHO has developed the Global Technical Strategy for Malaria, which provides a technical framework for all endemic countries as they work towards control and eventually elimination. The first goals to be reached by the year 2030 are to reduce malaria incidence by at least 90%, reduce malaria mortality rates by at least 90%, eliminate the disease in at least 35 countries, and prevent a resurgence of malaria in all countries that are malaria-free. If we are to be successful, donors must help fund the effort. The United States government has been involved in global malaria activity since the 1950s, and today is the largest donor to global malaria efforts, including through its President's Malaria Initiative and U.S. contributions to the Global Fund to Fight AIDS, Tuberculosis, and Malaria. Still, if the 2030 targets of the Global Technical Strategy are to be achieved, total funding must increase substantially. On this day, we call on our friends and partners around the globe to reaffirm their commitment to this important effort.